I'm delighted to contribute to the celebration of Kari's very significant birthday. Happy birthday, dear Kari, with this introduction to the life of Laura, Kari's beloved Aunt Mousie, as she was called in the family, Karpolani's older sister. It's not an easy task, as it requires to digest a book into less than 15 minutes. Laura, I will stick with the English pronunciation, was, after all, the central character in my book on the Polanyis, in which I trace the family's history through the lives and accomplishments of three women, one in each generation. First among them was the mother of Karl, Cecil Polacek, née Vol, a famous salonist, legendary bohemian, and champion of Russian revolutionaries. She was a fixture on Budapest's modernist scene who made the leap from country to country and culture to culture seem easy without ever properly learning Hungarian. This was a leap her children and grandchildren went on to emulate under even more difficult circumstances. But the family had many other remarkable women, foremost among them Kari's mother, Ilona Duchinska. When I met Kari almost a quarter of a century ago, hard to believe, we agreed that it was a pity that, because of the focus of my project on the Polanyis, Ilona made only a few appearances in the book. Nonetheless, Kari proved to be a most generous and valuable source of information and insight, and in the coming years, a wonderful dinner companion. Laura Polacek, she changed her name to the more Hungarian-sounding Polanyi in 1911, was born in 1882 in Vienna and died in 1959 in New York City. Her accomplishments could easily fill a book. In a Wikipedia entry format, she would be rightly described as a trailblazer, a card-carrying feminist, one of the first women in Hungary to earn a PhD, pioneering educator, and the political activist during the revolution of 1918. In the 1930s, she became part of the intellectual refugee wave from Hitler's Europe, and in the 1950s in the US, she made a remarkable contribution to American historical scholarship. In order to make sense of these accomplishments, however, we need to consider the context, the three distinct historical periods she bridged, and the major political and social crises of the 20th century she weathered. Perhaps then, it is a life that should be narrated in three acts taking place in three historical eras. The first, the fantasy act in the heyday and twilight of the Austro-Hungarian monarchy in Budapest and Vienna. The second, the post-war and interwar period in Budapest, Vienna, Weimar, Berlin, with a detour to the Soviet Union. And the third act in the United States, mainly New York City, where Laura and her immediate family, husband and children with their spouses, arrived and settled in 1938-1939. So to the first act. Laura and the next two Polacek children, Adolf and Karl, were born in Vienna in 1882, 1883, and 1886, respectively, and moved to Budapest, where their father started a successful railway building company during Hungary's Gründerzeit in the 1890s. The family's apartment became one of the meeting places of the emerging, small but glorious modernist artistic and intellectual scene of Budapest. Unlike the much better known Vienna Secession, it was progressive, left-leaning, with plans to democratize Hungary's old regime-ruled political life and supplant its stale nationalistic culture with a modernist one. The Polacek children grew up in Cecil's Sunday salon, listening to these plans, and, along with several cousins from the extended family, would, in the coming decade and a half, contribute in important ways to it. The children completed their elementary education at home, as was customary in upper middle class families. High school started at age 10, and along with her brothers, Laura also enrolled first as a private student. For young girls in upwardly mobile, assimilated Jewish families, this would not have been unheard of at the time, but still exceptional. 4 years later, in 1896, a ministerial decree opened the faculties of medicine and arts to women and established the first academic high school for girls. And in 1900, Laura graduated with the first class of young women who received a diploma that qualified them for university admission. She enrolled and majored in history and Hungarian literature, once again one in a small vanguard of female university students. And I wish I could show you some family pictures, because young Laura was not only an outstanding student, but a legendary beauty, simply lovely. She maintained ambitions for an academic career even after her father's bankruptcy in 1899, and as a responsible elder sister, supported her younger siblings' studies by working several part-time academic positions. Then, in her last semester, she astonished her friends by announcing her marriage to Sándor Stricker, an industrialist 13 years her senior, not an intellectual or a member of her circle. Three children followed, Michael in 1905, Eva in 1906, and George in 1913. And again, I'm sorry, I can't show you photos of the three adorable Stricker children dressed in impeccably tailored outfits. And what initially may have seemed as a conventional choice turned out to be nothing but. In the decade before World War I, Laura went on to complete a doctorate on early 18th century Habsburg economic policy, opened an experimental kindergarten based on Freudian principles, as the ads announced, all the while maintaining households in Budapest and Vienna, activities in the Feminist Association, and, to cap it off, organizing the women's auxiliary of Oskar Jassy's Bourgeois Radical Party during the 1918 Democratic Revolution. Act II, what followed, was counter-revolution, white terror, and the consolidation of the extreme-right anti-Semitic Horthy regime. Laura soon became the only sibling still living in Hungary, witnessing their former circle dispersed, forced to exile, or to the margins. With scholarly and political avenues closed off, she dedicated herself to raising her children, and as they became independent, remained involved in their lives. I will only mention her extended visits to Kharkov and Moscow, where two of her children moved to in the 1930s, in the mid-1930s, as I'm sure the details are covered in the segment on Eva Zeisel. The details of the heroic operation she orchestrated to help her children, their families, her husband, her brother Adolf, and her nephews and nieces escape Stalin's prison, Nazi-ruled Austria, fascist Italy, and increasingly Nazified Hungary are impossible to relate in a few minutes. Her efforts, coordinated with Michael Polanyi, were nothing short of epic, requiring extraordinary energy as well as research and diplomatic skills. And they were mostly successful, with the tragic exception of her younger sister Zsófi and her son, who were deported from Vienna and killed. Laura herself was briefly detained in Vienna after the Anschluss, struggled with illness, was stranded in England before reuniting with her children in New York, sailing on the proverbial last ship just before World War II erupted. The third American act of Laura's life was in many ways content. She was proud of all her children and their families thriving, her brothers more or less reconciling their political and personal differences, largely owing to her mediation. And at long last, there was professional success. It was a story full of fateful turns and coincidences, narrated by her in a wonderful letter to Carl Polanyi of one immigrant, Laura, getting the chance to restore the reputation of another immigrant, Captain John Smith, the founder of Virginia, previously branded a liar and a braggart. In her last years, Laura earned recognition as a historian who made an important contribution to early American history, not measured perhaps in an academic appointment, which she did not seek anyway, but publications and acknowledgement by peers. It was a triumph rarely seen among emigre historians, let alone women of a certain age. She traveled for research, established professional contacts in Hungary, Austria, and the US, and published with an energy that betrayed her deep intellectual capacity and ambition, and hinted at what she could have achieved given an earlier chance. She also had another less public, but no less valuable contribution as the family historian and custodian of the family's archives. Not only did she leave behind short but invaluable summaries of the Polanyi's early history, and perhaps to prove a point, notes on her husband's prominent ancestors, but generations of researchers have benefited from her extraordinary efforts. Most of them would not suspect that the voluminous Polanyi collection at the Hungarian National Library or the private archives in New York exist because of the massive amount of family documents she preserved, rescued, and miraculously transported to the US because she was aware of their significance. In closing, let me to some degree question or undermine this mildly triumphalist narrative. There is no question about Laura's formidable intellectual talents, perhaps on par with those of her two famous brothers. All her accomplishments, and I did not have time to mention all of them, but genuine and remarkable. Rhymed off, they might give the illusion of a seamless continuum, perhaps a true American success story, which are even more formidable if we consider the obstacles from resistance to women's higher education in the early 20th century Hungary to discrimination against emigres, women, and Jews in the US in the immediate post-Second World War period. What they don't tell us is the less glamorous, often invisible work characterized by scholars as women's work, the kind Laura Polanyi and, to his credit, Michael Polanyi, performed between 1938 and 1941, rescuing family, friends, and colleagues in the face of tremendous odds. A handwritten note among Laura Polanyi's papers offers another way to put all of this in context. Historian to the core, in it, Laura reflected on her own trajectory and described her professional life as an uphill, at times futile struggle to maintain amidst, and I quote, the possibilities and impossibilities of the 20th century, end of quote. I find this an elegant phrase that encapsulates her arc from the possibilities of the early 20th century, when she could almost claim to have it all, to the struggle for mere survival in the middle, to her late professional vindication. And the way she achieved all of that, finding a balance between pushing for radical change and respecting tradition worth preserving, is what I think makes Laura stand out in this extremely talented and accomplished clan. Thank you very much for your attention.